Megan Delahunt is an Australian writer living in Edinburgh. Once a member of the Socialist Workers' Party of Australia and a worker on the General Motors car assembly line, where she was also a union leader, today Melbourne-born Megan Delahunt is an award-winning novelist based in Edinburgh, where she's been for the past 15 years. There she lectures in creative writing at the University of St Andrews, and she's currently writing her third novel, set in Greece. Megan's previous novel, The Red Book, is an exploration of the human desire to shed past lives, or in Megan's words, become snake new, knitting together the lives of Francois, an Australian photographer visiting the Bhopal disaster, Naga, a Tibetan refugee whose family were killed in the disaster, and RK, an ex-hard man from Scotland who swaps his alcoholic ways for Buddhism. Today for the book show, Megan Delahunt opens the doors to her private writing space in Edinburgh as we continue our series on UK writers' rooms with Fiona Kroll.
Megan Delahunt, we've come off the street because, of course, your flat is on the ground level. We're now entering your writer's room. Wooden floorboards. It's very bright and airy. Describe it for the listener.
Describe it. Well, it's our bedroom space and I work under the bed. We'd renovated this place. So I used to work right over on the street, right next to the window, which was freezing. And so, and we didn't have central heating for the first few years we lived here. So now we built this little staircase up to the bed, and I'm under the bed, and it's like a ship's cabin where I work. I love it. It's cold still because the ceilings are so high and the heating never heats these old tenements, but I love it under there. So I work under the bed.
You've got a trestle table with a glass top. You've got a computer there. No view and a white wall.
A white wall is always important for me. I like to have no distractions when I'm writing. I like to have that whole zen quality of just you and the blank wall, so that writing's like a meditation then for me.
It's not totally white though, is it? You've got a bookshelf behind you.
And a red tanka on the wall and an old secondhand typewriter, which doesn't work, but I love. I love the idea of writing on that typewriter one day. I feel quite concealed from the world here.
And do you refer to your books behind you? I notice there's one, Creative Writing, there's The Art of the Story, but you've also got novels, William Boyd, Restless.
Yeah, I mean, those creative writing ones are for work, actually, because I teach creative writing. But at the moment, there's quite a lot of Greek books there, and also I'm very interested in haiku, and I've been writing haiku for the last few years, so there's quite a lot of Japanese stuff on my table, and Japanese and Greek stuff at the moment that I make reference to.
Now, Megan, you were once an active member of the Socialist Workers' Party in Melbourne, working on a car production line, standing on tabletops and haranguing the union moderates, a Trotskyite, perhaps agitator. But now, you know, quietly spoken, you've got a zen about yourself, in fact. You know, you talked about your wall being quite zen-like. I feel this kind of zen energy coming from you, although you are clad in lipstick, which is a good thing. When did you realise that you wanted to be a writer, that change from that Melbourne lifestyle that you had to this person here in this writer's space?
Yes, well, I was living in Western Australia at the time and I wasn't very well, and I was lying in bed and reading The Golden Notebook. By Doris Lessing. And that really crystallised for me that there was another life outside of this mad activist life that didn't leave any space for creativity or spirituality or individuality. And I found it really inspiring that she was writing about a woman who was struggling with those sort of issues, but in the 50s and 60s, I think. And it made me realise that there was a life outside of this activist, non-stop, relentless life that I'd been living. And it gave me the courage, really, to decide that I could leave that life and pursue my own writing. And that's what I did.
Well, let's talk about the process of writing. Before writing your last published work, The Red Book, that tells the story of three strangers who meet in Bhopal in India, 20 years after that horrendous gas leak that killed thousands of people, you know, you spent 5 years writing a different book set in India, which I think is incredibly interesting, before ditching it. So what makes you know that your character or your story isn't going to end up as a published work? Take us through that kind of process of writing and then knowing that you're going to follow another stream of narrative.
I think what happens with writing, and it certainly happened with the process of getting to the Red Book, was that sometimes the story you think you're telling is not the story that needs to be told. And so it was actually nearly 6 years, you know, at more around the six-year mark that I realised I was never, ever going to be able to make this book work. You know, I'd had two residencies in India. I'd had all this time to be working on it. And I just was in this incredible creative depression, I guess you would say. I just couldn't get any further with it. I'd finished it numerous times. But what I realised that there was this small character in it, Françoise, who I had kind of disregarded and I never really got a handle on her. And I realised, actually, oh my God, she's a photographer. And it's her story. And it's not this story that I thought. I thought it was an after-death story in the mind of this Buddhist monk who is R.K. in the Red Book. But it wasn't an after-death story at all. It was actually much more rooted in the concrete and so on. The book that I was writing before had all those elements of Buddhism, of the Bhopal accident, or, you know, tragedy, of bringing these three very different characters together, this Tibetan monk, you know, this Scottish man who's a traveller and alcoholic, and then this Australian photographer, bringing all those people together. But at the time, I didn't realise what the combinations were and whose story was important and how to tell it. And so it was very painful to have to say, okay, this is not the book I thought it was, and put it away. But I think creativity and destruction go together. And so it was really, really important for me to destroy that previous book and start again. You know, I think those impulses are very linked, and sometimes you have to get out of your own way and destroy what you've done before in order for regeneration to come through. And I think that's really what happened. I mean, I'm making it sound like a really pleasant cycle of life process, but it was really, really painful. It was just so shockingly painful. But I'm really glad I did it.
Well, it would be great to hear a reading from your last book, The Red Book. Take us to page 11, Megan, and set the scene for the listener.
Okay. This is right from pretty much the beginning of the book. It's Françoise talking about when she comes to Delhi. She's an Australian photographer, and she works in black and white, but she has a quality about her that we all have. It's synesthesia, where your senses are all mixed up. And she works in black and white to contain this. But this is her in Delhi. I stayed in Delhi for over a month. I developed my own routine. Before breakfast, I'd walk around the colony in the cool of early morning. For the first week, I didn't take any photographs. In a new place, it always took a while to accustom the eye. This was something I'd learnt. It takes a long time to train yourself to really see properly. It's a lifetime apprenticeship, to practice seeing every day without the camera. On good days when I was out looking, patterns emerged. Sometimes it was cheekbones or buildings with vivid faces. Sometimes it was a gesture or the way people walked. Other days, nothing sung out. But I'd learnt through experience that I could wait and that I could persevere. The colony was a maze of old and new areas marked by signs in non-alphabetical order. I'd turn right at the front gate for a lap around M block into H block, past the free homeopathic clinic with the incense spilling out through the open doors, past an old woman heating an iron on a slab under a shade tree, then into the small park, already full of big matriarchs and their plump sons, doing one lap after another, before the real heat of the day set in. It was like a symphony, this walking. I could feel myself easing into this life here, the bright puzzle of framing what I heard. It was always a puzzle because the world is in colour and it seems so loud and raw. Orange has the woody tones of a marimba. Certain words tasted gold or caramel. We're all born like this, synesthetic, hearing colours, seeing sounds, or so the story goes. Some of us stay that way. Because of this, I've always been drawn to black and white. It's been my way of negotiating things. This way of seeing affects my work. All people, objects and places have a special sound and texture. India, for example, is red. Tuesday is a green day. Everything chords through me. It's what I've become known for. Black and white photos with the feel of colour. Green panels and a blue sky and gold shadows on wood. You can hear it all in the shadings, but there are no colours in my photographs. There's just the feel of something missing. The fabric of something absent, something long gone, and the camera always clicks turquoise, my favourite sound.
One of the characters in this book, Naga, the Buddhist monk, at one point He says, gather yourself in this world of speed and aggression. Bring your mind back to a still place. Now, it strikes me in your novels that there's this sort of underlying theme, or a search for spirituality.
I'm glad you've said that, actually. That's a lovely thing to say, because often I'm taken as such a political writer. And I think that whole other dimension to my work is ignored or overlooked, you know. And, you know, even with the book I'm writing now, set in Greece, there is another dimension to the politics of it, if you like. I am very interested in how the broader political world impacts on individuals, but I'm very, very interested in the individual's journey, their psyche, their spirituality. And so, yes, I would say there is that other dimension, but particularly with this book, because, you know, I do see it as being suffused with a Buddhist spirit and looking for that quiet, still place. I try to get to that quiet, still place to write out of it, if you know what I mean. That when the mind settles, you can really allow your imagination to run free and get your own ego out of the way. Because I think all writing is a balance between ego. You need a huge ego to be able to write, but also egolessness. In order to create a character, I think you have to get out of the way. You have to allow them to come through. And if you can't find that quiet, still place to write out of, you're just going to be getting in the way of the characters all the time. So thank you for asking the question, because, yes, it's a big thing for me.
And do you live with your characters when you're writing? You say you have to get out of the way. Do they just filter into your mind? Do you live with them? Do you become someone else?
I think definitely when I'm sitting down, you know, handwriting and then putting it onto the computer, yeah, I'm in another, definitely in another space, and you're trying to see things and hear things and taste things through your characters. But I try and do the Hemingway thing, that as soon as I've finished for the day or whenever, you know, as soon as I finish my allotted time, I leave it behind. Or else, you know, you just can't sleep, you can't live. And then I let my subconscious work on it and my dreams and things like that. And then I get back to it the next day. And I always leave myself something to do as well. Even if it's misspelling on the page, I'll leave it deliberately misspelt so that I've got something to come back to and it's not so terrifying the next day.
Interesting. You say that your next book is going to be set in Greece. Mm. How important is a sense of place and even, you know, a sense of people? I remember Annie Proulx was saying that, you know, for me, the strongest influences are the varied landscapes and bare ground of the hinterlands, rough weather and rural people living lives in the pincers of damaging isolation, ingrained localisms and the economic decisions made by distant urban powers. And she said, the rush for me comes from the effort to put these lives on paper and through them examine the society that draws the lines. That was an interesting way of saying, you know, that the sense of place is important, of course, to her. But you've just been in Greece for 9 months. How important is it for you to live the life and go to the place that you're writing about?
It does seem to be very important, doesn't it? I mean, I went to Mexico for In the Blue House and, two stints in India for the Red Book and 9 months in Greece for this. I also just love change. And I love being in a place where English isn't spoken as well. I've realised that's really interesting for me, because then you come back to your own language in a different way and you hear it spoken in such wonderfully varied and beautiful ways that it disrupts your sense of what language is all about. I love being a foreigner and an outsider in places, and perhaps I deliberately seek that out. I don't know, I lived all around Australia in different places and I loved being, you know, the person who wasn't from the place. And even though I've been living in Scotland for so long, I've come from somewhere else. And in Greece, I come from somewhere else. So I think it's this constant sense of disruption which makes you see the world in a new way, in a fresh way. And maybe that's key to my work. I don't know.
So it obviously pushes the creative boundaries for you and your mind, and then to be able to get something on the page.
Yeah, I often find myself writing about where I am not. So I'm in Scotland writing about Australia, or in Greece writing about, you know, somewhere else, Scotland. That often seems to happen, that I'm not in the place necessarily I'm writing about at the time. Although, you know, yeah, the last 9 months I have been in Greece and writing about Greece, but also about Australia, you know.
I won't ask you to give us a reading of your next book, because I know you think it's bad luck. But you have written a short story set in Greece. You could give us the flavour, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. This was one of those wonderful things. The BBC Radio 4 commissions you for short stories, which is a wonderful thing for writers over here. And this story is called To the Island, and it starts off with a woman on a ferry, and it has fed into this new novel, some of the ideas and images here. So I'll just start from the beginning of this short story. Piraeus had a 50s grandeur, a run-down feel. She'd always loved it. The palm trees bent and spread and the paint peeled off the old buildings. From the ticket office, she watched the sailors prowl for a good time and the waiters snaking the pavement cafes. The bouzouki of love and loss eased out of bus windows. Loud horns marked departures and arrivals, and everyone smoked furiously. By day, it was a working port, but at night, with the cracked pavements and the brothels in the back streets, with the tourists and the sailors and the hungry-eyed, Piraeus could turn into something very different. They'd once stayed overnight in a Piraeus brothel, which doubled as a hotel. She remembered the huge silver numbers on the doors and the big women blowing smoke rings, smiling down at them from the stairs. It came back to her as she stood in the queue behind a wide-hipped woman with huge silver earrings. "But how much longer?" the woman demanded, throwing up her hands. "The Blue Star Paros is late," the woman said. "3 hours late." The ticket seller looked up from behind the counter, raised his chin and made a clicking sound with his tongue. With his cigarette, he pointed through the open door to the plastic bags and newspapers blowing past. "The wind!" He shook his head and took a sip from his frappe. "It's too strong today." He looked up at the woman. "Tina kanume," he said. And then in English, "What can we do?"
Well, Megan, thank you so much for letting us into your writer's space. It's been a delight.
It's been great. Thank you.
For the book show, Fiona Kroll speaking there with Megan Delahunt in her Edinburgh Writers' Room. And In the Blue House is published by Bloomsbury, and The Red Book is published by Granta.